Welcome to The Lobbying Show, the show about the people of government relations, how they got into it, and what their jobs entail, what works and what doesn't. I am the host, Jim O'Brien.
So I spent the last week in LA for NCSL. During the summer, they have many different conferences. NCSL is one of the bigger ones. It 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 attendees, it's legislators, companies, and meetings during the day on various topics from Medicaid to drones to marijuana to blockchain. And then there are receptions at night from, you know, various states may have them in various different places. And there's events surrounding the conference at night and during the day. And it's just, it's a lot of meeting of people, exchanging of business cards and networking and information. And it's really great. It's what, you know, people in this business like doing, like meeting and talking to people and exchanging information and networking. And it's a lot of that, and it's very productive. And while there, I got a chance to interview Kevin Callahan. Kevin Callahan works at CompTIA. He's one of their state directors. I think he handles, I can't remember how many states he said he handles, but he handles a lot of states. CompTIA used to be known as Tech America. And Kevin's been there about 5 years. He used to be in the paper industry. And it goes to show you that once you have these state government, once you have these government relations skills down, they're transferable. You can take them from the paper industry to tech. And we learned a lot about CompTIA, about their certificate programs and how they're putting these programs out there to help fill these jobs. There's a lot of unfilled jobs in the tech world, and they're creating these, standardizing these curriculum programs so that people can get these certificates, and then the companies know that they're qualified, know that they have the basic skills they need. And these are great jobs. And so CompTIA is not only doing advocacy on behalf of their members, but they're creating programs like this, which is really just great stuff. So I enjoyed our chat with Kevin. I hope you enjoy it. He's recently married. My interview with Kevin Callahan. Kevin Callahan, we are here at NCSL, also known as the National Conference of State Legislatures. It's in LA, very nice sunny day. I'm sure you hit, so what conferences do you hit every summer? Do you hit most of them?
Do hit quite a few. This is definitely a can't miss
NCSL conference. Is a can't
NCSL,
miss.
Can't
okay.
miss.
Okay.
Always several thousand legislators, several thousand of your friends and colleagues from across the country coming into town to talk about everything under the sun. So lots of different sessions, lots of social networking events, just a few that go a little late.
Right.
But you can't miss those either.
Right. So there's panels and sessions during the day, which are educational in nature. And then there's a lot of receptions and dinners and things at night.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yep.
I think with all of the different issues that are coming up, really for the legislators, it's a great opportunity for them to hear different ideas of what other states are doing or on big issues that they're already aware of and working on, and how they can share some of how they approach the issue and passing legislation or looking at different policies and hearing about what's coming next. There's certainly a lot of things happening at the federal and international levels that have impacts on the state capitals and what they need to do. And I think that's a good opportunity for industry like myself to come in and share some of our perspective on the issue so that they have a more balanced appreciation for some of the nuances.
Right. And so they get to see what other states have done and to kind of get a sense of whether or not they like that approach or not.
Yes.
So you attend NCSL. What other conferences do you attend during the summer?
So NCSL, I think the Governors Association, the National Governors Association, some of the partisan groups as well.
Okay.
The Attorneys General is becoming, I think, more of a, particularly for my industry, the technology industry, a key group to interact with and get a sense of what some of the activities that the attorneys generals are looking at in their states.
One thing they're looking at now, which your members probably maybe not aren't too engaged on, the opioid crisis.
Right.
That's one area that they're working on, and several areas, issues like that, you know, consumer type issues, they get very engaged on.
And the opioid, that's a great example of where you're seeing every level, or you know, both the executive and the legislative branches are both working on. So, for example, the Governors Association had a pretty extensive panel on it at their recent meeting a couple weeks ago in Santa Fe. You heard it here at NCSL with some of the legislative panels and staff from legislatures also talking about it and some of the different policy approaches. And AGs is the top law enforcement officer in a state and how they're bringing it. So you're seeing it across all the different branches, and the conferences are really
a great place to
had a lot of discussions on it, yes.
Okay. Other conferences? Any others you attend?
ALEC.
Okay.
The American Legislative Exchange Council. And so...
where is that this year?
This year will be in New Orleans.
Okay.
Coming up here in, I think, 2 weeks. So
okay.
It's a,
so you
it's
go home and
time.
Then head there? And then what about CSG? Do you attend?
The CSG, yeah. So because I'm a regionally based government affairs professional, I tend to like to go to the regional meetings, and so they have an Eastern meeting coming up in New York, so it's a great opportunity. I feel that it's people can be more approachable at some of those regional meetings. It's a smaller gathering. So you're able to really talk to folks on a one-on-one basis.
A little bit more give and take, and a little bit more time.
Right.
Wow, so that's a lot of conferences.
It's a lot, yes.
So let's take a step back and talk about your association, your mission, what you're about, the type of companies that are members.
Sure. So the Computing Technology Industry Association, or CompTIA, we're as we are known,
yep.
We're a global IT trade association, and so we represent a little over 2,000 member companies. Just everything from your household names, your technology companies. You know, I'm sure you have a few products. I'm sure you peruse a few different websites and social networking platforms of our members, as well as a number of small and medium sized businesses that are engaged in the IT space as well. And so, really, the mission is just to continue to drive increased innovation, opportunity to compete in across the world, you know, growing the technology industry. And that includes not just for large companies, but that's also IT professionals. So we work with a number of IT professionals, helping them advance their careers in the space, and not just coding issues, but also some of your IT help desk, you know, is at the lowest level to more senior kind of cybersecurity ninjas, if you will. You know, people on the front lines of dealing with some of those cybersecurity threats and risk management and response. So it's been a great opportunity to work with a variety of different people within a very broad and diverse industry sector.
And what are some of the issues you're dealing with right now in the different state legislatures?
Sure. So
or will be in the next year.
Will be, yeah. Well, I think without a doubt the largest issue that we've seen has been addressing some of the privacy related issues. So consumer privacy, data security, collection of and use of data, and you know that interaction between both private businesses and you know
consumers.
And consumers, right? So that we've seen in a number of different states come up. Certainly in Congress they've discussed it, and as we know, Congress moves at a different pace than some of the states, and so...
So the states are getting more engaged, so you
absolutely.
Actually spend more time maybe
absolutely.
Focusing
well,
on the states.
Where we're sitting here today in Los Angeles, California passed pretty sweeping privacy legislation a little over a month ago that, you know, will become the de facto law of the land, but we'll see other states start to look at that as well and perhaps look to pass legislation of their own.
And explain to our listeners why that becomes the de facto law of the land when just one state passes it.
Well, I think because the way the laws are written, and particularly on, you know, when you're talking about the internet, for example, it really knows no borders. And so, you know, the websites that a California resident views are the same that you would view in Connecticut or me in Washington, D.C. And so companies, because the market here in California is so large, they're going to adjust their entire system to comply with California law. And so that, you know, it will cover, you know, likely cover all Americans. You know, we saw that in Europe with the GDPR, their privacy regulation that was recently adopted. I'm sure you got some of those emails with all of your websites alerting you to those changes. And so, you know, now you're seeing companies that had to comply with that, where we Americans probably are experiencing maybe some benefits of that, if you will. It depends how you look at what a benefit is, but we're seeing that type of compliance challenge now with an additional layer of a new California law, which in some cases might conflict with that. So it becomes a real challenge for companies to to meet that. And you know, I think people, you know, legislators, policymakers in other states are looking at this. This is a very sensitive and important topic that's being discussed. So I think the industry is trying to wrap its head around, you know, how best to look at the year ahead.
To meet those needs. And so can you give us just a brief summary of what the new California law does?
Well, I mean, in essence, it regulates how companies collect information and what you as a consumer, how you can perhaps opt out of that company's collection and use of data. I mean, certainly we all provide our consent to use different online services, mm-hmm. and that steers, frankly, our, you know, how effective those services can be to us.
Right.
And so this would create a significant change in the way that we know the internet today to operate and all the different services and platforms that we regularly utilize. And so I think it will take some time to get through that, because there are a number of inconsistencies. I think legal memos that I've seen circulated, you know, publicly as well, just pointing out some of the flaws. It was a hastily crafted piece of legislation. And they recognize that here in California, the lawmakers who enacted it. So they're going through a process right now of tweaking it some. And so it's, you know, the ink's not dry yet.
And they were doing that to head off the referendum?
Is correct. That so right. Okay. So California has a referendum process. And there was a gentleman from San Francisco who was looking to pass a even more restrictive ballot initiative. And so this was part of a way to remove that from the ballot initiative process, so that there could be more thought and an effort into crafting a more sensible policy.
Okay, and tell us about your job responsibilities.
Sure. So, you know, as I mentioned, I'm a regional-based person, so I live in Washington D.C. I cover 13 states. So I find myself in Hartford from time to time, Boston, Augusta, Maine, Montpelier, Albany, you name it. And so it's just, you know.
And you go to these capitals
to the capitals to advocate on issues impacting the industry. So
testify at committees.
Testify, also conduct some meetings, perhaps some, host some briefings, mm-hmm. you know, on important issues, you know, just like we would do at an event like NCSL, but perhaps more targeted to legislators in a particular state who are focused on an issue and providing them our perspective. And
do you enjoy testifying before committee?
Sometimes. Sometimes I do. Sometimes it can be a little tense, depending on the issue.
Are certain states more difficult than others?
I think it's probably more depends on the issue. I mean, I think everybody has a different approach. You know, Vermont, for example, very collegial, friendly setting. You're in a very small room often, sitting around a desk where everybody around you is maybe only a foot away from you while you're reading, you know, presenting your testimony. And try not to read verbatim, of course. I don't think that's ever very effective. But, you know, if you're giving testimony, and so it's often more conversational testimony rather than, say, you presenting your 2 to 3 minutes of brief remarks and then having some Q&A. Whereas, you know, in your state, Connecticut, that's a marathon because of the number of bills that a given committee will take up.
Right.
Can be on a very diverse set of issues.
Right.
So you can be there from, you know, 9 o'clock in the morning and not testify until 9 o'clock at night in some cases, depending on the issue.
You know, sometimes it's just first come, first serve by sign up.
Right.
And sometimes it's
and
by
you get
bill
bumped.
Order.
You get bumped if an elected official comes in.
Right. First hour is reserved for public officials.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which can often go beyond the first hour, right?
Correct. And then they go back and forth.
Right. Yeah. So it's they're all different. Some states, you know, like New York, you really don't often testify in some of the regular committee meetings. There will be some more, you know, public meetings where you might be invited by the committee to address them or provide your remarks. You know, being in New York, it might not be necessarily in Albany, but host a joint committee hearing in downtown Manhattan where you're talking on a particular issue as well. But I mean, honestly, I think many of the states, it's been, you know, I don't think any state is more difficult than the other. It's just different approaches, and it always depends on, you know, the issue. I think there are some issues that really evoke different emotions in people, and you know, sides are very clearly spelled out,
right.
And so it can sometimes get tense. But that's right. Why we have to be there.
And how many people work? How many employees are at your organization?
So CompTIA has, I think it's about 300 employees. We're global, so we work on a number of different, not just on public policy and advocacy, but we also are developing some certifications for the IT workforce. So we have a wholly separate group that, you know, works on that, where they bring in different professionals in the industry to set some best standards and create a certification that people can work towards achieving in community colleges, on your own. You know, so there are lots of different opportunities there. And again, you know, with the mission of driving the IT industry forward, so that's getting the best and brightest trained, certified, and filling jobs. There's so many IT jobs that are open. We worked with the NIST, which is in DC, and they focus on cybersecurity.
What does that stand for?
NIST is the National Institute of Science and Technology, but they have a cybersecurity education initiative that we've worked with them on, highlighting all the states and the jobs that they have available in the cybersecurity space. And it's incredible how many are out there that are open positions, and also showing kind of the pipeline of talent, you know, how many people are filling those roles, and, you know, where they're coming from, education levels, also salary. So it's been a great tool to provide legislators, governors in particular, so that they can see, you know, how their state stacks up versus some of the others as they're developing their cybersecurity and IT programs.
How many different certificate programs do you think you have?
Boy, I should probably know this. I think it's about a dozen.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So we've, I think it's, we're over 3 million certifications issued as well. We work with the federal government and also with state governments, and certainly, you know, within the private sector. So you'll see a lot of businesses where they want their IT departments, you know, to have, you know, meet certain standards and certifications. Also, you as an individual, you might want that on your, you know, just like you would perhaps a JD.
Right.
If you were going to enter the legal field, you want a certification to show that you have some background.
So you help create these programs and then push them out to various community school, you know, colleges or what?
Right.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's great.
Yeah, it's been a great way to, you know, again, show kind of the breadth of what our association does. You know, I'm mostly focusing on the advocacy side of things, but it's always good to have a more proactive and positive message, I think, on some of the things. And I think everybody can get behind workforce development. I think everybody wants to have a good paying job, raise a family in a good area, send them good schools. You want them to grow up and get good jobs too. So workforce development, I think you've heard probably several sessions here at NCSL on that. You'll hear them, you know, most states have workforce development boards, so we work with them too, and having that message has been helpful.
And so how did you get into government relations?
So I started actually in Maryland. I worked for a state senator, was the first job that I had, and spent pretty much two sessions at his side, all day, all night, it seemed, on issues that he was working on. I also had the unique opportunity where he was running for U.S. Senate at the time, the first year, against a long-sitting senator who's now since retired. But it was just a good opportunity to, you know, cut my teeth and get started in the industry. I went from there to a firm in Arlington and spent some time working on, you know, state and local government affairs, doing the monitoring. I view that as more of like a boot camp of reading, analyzing legislation, getting that out to clients, and then moving up the ladder there. And I've worked at a trade association now for, I've been with CompTIA for 5 years and its predecessor, Tech America. And prior to that, I was with a completely different industry, the paper industry. So it's mostly manufacturing issues. So I think that's what I brought to the table with the tech industry, was some manufacturing experience.
So they were okay. So you seem to develop, you developed a skill set of government relations or lobbying.
Yes.
In the paper industry, and they were not concerned that you didn't have much experience in the tech space. They were willing or knew that they could teach you that or educate you on that.
Right. I think there are certain you want to become a subject matter expert, but that's not necessarily on a particular issue set. That can take time, and you can develop that understanding, that knowledge base. But I think learning the processes in many different states through groups like NCSL and ALEC and others, how to navigate some of these and get your messaging across. So I think they were open to that, and I think it's worked.
Yeah, I've heard that from other people, that it's really, that the skill set is more government relations, and that the issues or the topics can be learned.
Right.
And so, where'd you grow up, Kevin?
Navy brat, so bounced around, but ended up in Annapolis, Maryland.
Okay.
So I finished high school there and then went to college at the University of Maryland.
Okay. So you're a Terrapin.
I'm a Terrapin, yeah. Fear the turtle.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's been, it's been strange to, kind of stay in the area, I guess, a little bit. Not many folks stay where they grew up, but a lot of people leave and come home.
Yep.
But it's been good.
All right. Well, Kevin, thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Jim.
Good luck here in L.A.
Thank you so much. You too.
All right. Great.